Welcome to Bare Roots,
the podcast that unearths the truth.
Allegedly.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina.
And I'm Shannon.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bare Roots. Today's episode might be on a topic that you may or may not be familiar with. I know when Shannon brought it up to me a while ago, I had no idea about it. And that is on Mount Rushmore's secret chamber. That's right. We're saying behind Abraham Lincoln's head on Mount Rushmore holds the history of our country's past. Literally. So Shannon, how are you feeling about today's episode?
I'm doing good. So this is a secret, not so secret chamber. We were not told, or at least I was never educated on it. It was never made known, but it's very readily accessible online if you know to look for it. Mm-hmm. And even if you go on Mount Rushmore's National Park Service website, it's right there. They're not trying to hide it. So it is known, but we just didn't think it was known by the general public. We figured we'd talk about it today, especially since it's July. It's, you know, past, at this point, we're a little bit past 4th of July, but, you know, we thought we might do American history episode.
Exactly. Yeah, this definitely was something that I had no idea about. But to your point, it's not necessarily a secret. You definitely can look it up and you'll see it on any other common website. But there's a lot of interesting facts about Mount Rushmore, how it came to be. Shannon and I are going to be diving into all about the sculptor, how the Mount Rushmore came to be, and really where did the whole idea of creating the secret chamber come from?
That's right. So let's just dive into it, I suppose.
Yes, let's do it.
So first we're going to go into the sculptor. And I did have to look up how to pronounce his name online. And it's Gutzon Borglum.
That was really great.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. I watched a video.
I felt the accent coming through.
Yeah, he's Danish. So I guess Gutzon is a Danish
name. Good morning.
So he was born, actually, he was born in this country in March of 1867 in Idaho, and his father was a Danish immigrant. It wasn't clear if his mother was. I don't think she was. I think his dad met his mom here. And by the age of 7, they were living in Nebraska. So he's familiar in this area that Mount Rushmore, you know, comes to be. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like his setting. Eventually, he and his family moved to California, and he opened up a small sculpting studio and gradually made a name for himself. It was pretty, I mean, it's kind of impressive. I don't know how a sculptor becomes recognized or becomes distinguished enough to get commissioned work, but he was able to do that for himself. So good on him. And he eventually made enough money to go study sculpture in Europe, which obviously is a great place to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And right before he left, he married a woman by the name of Elizabeth Putnam, who was an artist and a teacher. And drum roll, please.
Dun, 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 dun.
She was 20 years older than him.
Wow. If you guys have been listening to the podcast, you know we're a big fan of age because we like to just, you know, understand who these characters are. And a lot of times the man is significantly older than the woman. But wow, so she is a cougar.
Yeah. I think I did the math right, and he was about 21, so she was 41, marrying a 21-year-old.
Wow, and this is 1860-something, or maybe a little bit later, but
1890s, yeah.
Yeah, wow, that's crazy.
Which, yeah, that is crazy. Like,
yeah,
she was basically an old maid in that time.
Oh, yeah.
For marriage, yeah.
100%.
So that was kind of crazy, but unfortunately their marriage only lasted a few years because he was traveling too much, you know?
He was just being a young lad.
Yeah, he was traveling, he was exploring, she couldn't go or didn't want to go or what have you. Yeah, so they divorced and he actually was honing his skills in Europe and got more and more popular there. And some of his works were displayed for Queen Victoria in Windsor Castle.
Wow, I love her.
Alina, is that the Is that the queen that didn't allow the czar's children to come?
Ooh,
Am I testing your
she is the mother, I think, of the Tsar of Nicholas. No, her daughter, I think, married Nicholas.
Right, so she didn't allow the kids to come as refuge when they were being attacked, right? That was her.
I think it was her son who didn't allow it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I don't think she was alive then, because it happened, what, like 19, we said 17 or 14?
Yeah,
Yeah, she
17.
might have not been alive then. So I think it was the brother who didn't allow it, aka George, who didn't help.
I really thought I remember us saying that the grand, can you imagine having a grandmother that doesn't let you take refuge? I'm sorry I put you on the spot.
I
I
know this is murky
apologize.
water. This is really murky, and especially because I do like her, so I'm like, ah, oh, damn, you know?
That's
I really
why
want to just.
I thought it left a bad taste in my mouth. So.
Yeah, I really want to badly blame it on her son, like the first one, Birdie. Ooh.
Birdie.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay.
No.
Sorry. Back to Gutzon. So he was politically active and campaigned for Theodore Roosevelt. And he was a Freemason, which we
Ooh.
haven't gotten into yet, but
If
he
you
was a
know, you
Freemason.
know.
He ended up creating a huge head of Abraham Lincoln, and the work was completed and taken back to a shop window in New York. And when Robert Lincoln, which you don't really think about Lincoln's kids, I meant to look up a family tree of Abraham Lincoln. Like, are there still Lincolns around? Or did that
That's an
family
amazing
die out?
question. Yeah, how come we don't care about the family? How did this family last name not
Maybe
continue
they died out.
on? Yeah, I wonder. Wow, that's a great point, Shannon.
But when Abraham Lincoln's son was walking by and saw that head of Lincoln in the store shop window or the shop window, he said, quote, I never expected to see my father again.
Whoa.
Woo.
Imagine how realistic it must have been then.
Yeah, he must have done a good job. And the bust was later purchased and donated to the people of the United States and placed in the rotunda of the Capitol building where it remains today. So if you want to go visit, that's where that is. And that was done by our guy Gutzon. So he ended up dying in 1941, which was actually the same year that Mount Rushmore was completed. So he almost saw it to the end, but didn't quite. And it was from surgery. So it was kind of like a surprise death. He wasn't sick for a long time and he died at the age of 73. Not originally, I found later on in my research that he may or may not have been in the KKK. Not good.
Not good.
And well, I looked that up a little bit more and he never admitted to, which doesn't really mean anything, but he was working on a commission in the South to basically do Mount Rushmore, but with Confederate leaders. And he had a difficult personality and he ended up getting fired, or yeah, I think he got fired and then he ended up breaking all of his models for that work. So it never got completed. And that's when they cite the times that he was in going to participating in KKK events. So I don't know if it was a like, I'm trying to get money for my work kind of thing, or if he truly believed in those beliefs, but that's definitely not a good image. And I thought it was interesting that the National Park Service biography section of him did not mention that. And that's where I got the previous information. So we just wanted to be a little bit transparent on him that it is a little bit up in the air about that political leaning.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. If you do research him, you might find that information. But exactly, we just, want to share that with the class. So now that we've learned about a little bit the sculptor Gutzon, let's talk about Mount Rushmore and how did the secret chamber come to be. So in 1923, the idea of the sculpture was actually suggested by Duane Robinson. And the sculptor to do this job was chosen, as we talked about, by Goodson. So he was the one who's going to really see the project through. And so by 1925, so 2 years later, it was decided that it was going to happen. They got the green light. Which is crazy how long it takes for the idea, for them to give the green light. And then not until 1927, so another 2 years, it actually begins. So mm-hmm. I'm sure it has to do with like funds, the equipment, all of that fun stuff. So in the summer of 1927, President Calvin Coolidge was in the Black Hills, which is the area that they call it. And Borglum was planning a formal dedication of the mountain. Borglum hired a plane to fly over where Coolidge was staying. And as he flew over, Borglum dropped a wreath to invite the president to the dedication ceremony.
Ballsy way to invite somebody to something. Dropping a wreath from a plane?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Very interesting. And President Coolidge agreed to attend the ceremony, which was held on August 10th, 1927, and gave a speech promising federal funding for the project. So Borglum arranged a meeting with the United States Secretary of Treasury, Andrew Mellon, to secure his support for the project and the passage of a funding bill called the Mount Rushmore National Memorial Act. So it's like he's kind of doing the business. He's being the businessman, trying to get this going. And Borglum was able to convince Secretary Mellon of the importance of the project and gain his support for funding the entire cost. So Borglum instead asked for only about half of what he needed. So maybe he was feeling a little shy. I can understand that. So he believed that he would be able to match federal funding dollar for dollar with private donations. And Senator Norbeck was stunned that Borglum had turned down the offer of a full federal funding. So he technically had the option to get the full thing, but he was like, no, no, no.
Don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it. I got it in the bag. Like, people in the private sector are going to help fund this. Like, the government only have to do half. So, I mean, of course, the government's like, okay. And it ended up being about $250,000 of federal money. So through the 30s, they continued to get funding through the emergency relief programs of the New Deal, which, if you remember, of course, during that time, you got the Great Depression. So it's right. Not really the ideal time to have a project. How are they going to fund it? So that's how they were able to maintain this project, was through this emergency relief program.
Which I'm trying to remember if I knew that before. I know the Hoover Dam was a part of that New Deal situation. So they started doing all of these different public works during that time. And this is one of them.
Mm-hmm. A lot of national parks, right, too?
Yeah.
During that time. So that's how they were able to continue it. But it's kind of funny, actually, now that we're really analyzing it, how so he had the option to get the full federal funding, but then he said no. And then he's like, I'm going to get through the private sectors. And, of course, the Great Depression happened. So that's probably why he had a bit of a struggle when it came to finances. Because, of course, the private sector was going downhill.
Yeah, definitely. Not the best.
No. So in 1938, we're speeding through time a little bit. There was a bit of a struggle for control between Borglum and the National Park Service, but he did regain it. When he got control back, he began construction of the Hall of Records, which was a large repository in a valley behind the sculpture. So this is what we're getting the idea of the secret chamber.
Mm-hmm. It's called the Hall of Records.
Mm-hmm. And it was intended to tell the story of Mount Rushmore and of the United States. He was really big in the whole idea of, if you look at, for example, the pyramids in Egypt, or if mm-hmm. you look at the Stonehenge, you don't really know who created it, how it came to be, like, what is the story of it? We don't really only have guesses. And so he thought to himself, if I'm going to be making this huge sculpture in the mountain, I want people to be able to go to it thousands of years later. If there was a new, I don't know, I was going to say human race, but like, if like anything happened, essentially, they would be able to go to this thing and look at it and be like, what is the story? And then bam, there would be the Hall of Records to explain who did it, what happened, what was the story of the US and all of that fun stuff, which is actually quite, I don't even know what the word is, but very like futuristic of him.
Yeah, it's a big time capsule, pretty much, is what he wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So again, he really wanted a history of all of America's greatest hits, which is kind of like funny to say, like imagining this like an album, like America's greatest hits.
But as of 1938, you know?
Yeah.
So much more to come.
Exactly. So this really included an 800-foot stairwell or stairway with a large bronze eagle that would have about a wingspan of 38 feet at the entrance. So the chamber would have been 80 feet tall and 100 feet long. There would be an inscription above the eagle that would read America's Onward March and the Hall of Records, as we mentioned earlier. And then carved into the walls would read America's 9 most important events from 1776 to 1906. And there would be busts of famous Americans who would line the hall, as well as a list of contributions to art, science, and just the general industry. But after the United States Congress threatened to cut off all funding for the project unless used specifically to finish the sculpture itself, Borglum reluctantly stopped working on the hall in 1939. So they basically were like, okay, we need to look at our finances. Yeah. And I know, Borglum, you love to have this Hall of Records, which sounds amazing, but we really only have enough money for you to just finish the dang faces. Like, that's it. Right. So this was really heartbreaking for him.
They were focus?
Yeah.
Focus?
Exactly. He really wanted to take on this project and like had his vision, which I totally understand. But yeah, when you're looking at who's funding it, yeah, you got to take those stakeholders into consideration.
Yeah, yeah.
So unfortunately, the Hall of Records was never finished in 1939. But then a couple years later, by 1941, it was completed. And by it, I mean the like Mount Rushmore.
Right. They never completed the Hall of Records.
Mm-hmm. So today, sealed behind a 1,200-pound granite slab and tucked inside a wooden box are 16 documents. Okay, I don't believe in this, including the U.S. Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights.
No, they're carved into panels.
Okay, that's what I thought. It's not literal documents because that's in the National Archives Museum. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, I just would like that to be clarified for people because it does sound a little misleading. So it's just carved into it, these major documents. It's not the legit things. The legit things are in Washington, D.C. And of course, there's like a little biography of Borglum, which I'm sure he would have loved, and short descriptions of each of the presidents featured on the monument. So the hall itself that we're talking about that not many people know about, which is probably why, is actually closed to the public. Also very hard to get to, even if you did want to get to it. But I love the vision of being a tourist, being able to go into this Hall of Records. It does sound really cool, very interactive. And I can only imagine seeing it in person because I have never seen it in person. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, I feel like that'd be really cool to see in person. And kind of like the sculptor, there is a lot of controversy over the Mount Rushmore, the land that it's on. So a lot of people talk about how the land itself, which is located in the Black Hills, is very sacred to original Native American tribes. They had to go through a lot of violence, a lot of disagreements on the land itself. And there's just a lot of controversy on who the land belonged to, kind of the struggles from the Native American side of the land, and the fact that this area actually had a lot of gold there. So for a lot of people, this was a huge deal. So that's kind of where the tables started to turn and they were pushed out from their indigenous area. So yeah, again, we just want to be transparent about kind of the the land of Mount Rushmore.
Definitely a controversial project, and I don't know how much people know that.
Exactly. So this is a little bit about who the sculptor was, what is the secret chamber, and what would it have entailed. There's some speculation about it, and we want to talk about that and just some interesting facts that you may or may not know about Mount Rushmore. But before we dive into that, we'll first hear a word from our sponsor. Alrighty, welcome back. So when Shin and I were researching, we actually couldn't find a lot of speculation or a lot of conspiracy theories on it, which you would think for it being like a not so secret chamber, there might be some, but there wasn't a heavy presence, but there was a couple little nuggets that we found. So we want to talk about it and just kind of think like, what is our opinions on these? First one is, some people believe that the most prominent U.S. secret files have been there or living in there. And this is actually the real reason why tourists are not allowed. What do you think about that?
Are we talking like files on aliens and things like that? Is that what we're talking about?
Possibly just classified information. Like if you were going to hide it somewhere, why not hide it allegedly, you know, in the not so secret chamber where the public can't even get to?
Right. I mean, I would counter with there are a lot of places that the public cannot get to, but I do think it's very
national treasures.
Yes. It's very, it's very national treasure. And we don't, they said that they dug into the chamber a little bit, but they, you know, stopped due to funding. So it's not the big 800-foot chamber isn't, 800-square-foot chamber isn't back there. But maybe they did. Maybe they did dig it out. And, you know, they're getting us, they're hiding it in plain sight, kind of, almost. Because they're letting us know, hey, there's a chamber here that was never finished. Haha. But yeah, maybe they have some stuff in there. Maybe it's temperature controlled. Maybe it's super high tech. And there's like you pull a rock and then you are going down a glass tube and then ooh, you're in this state-of-the-art chamber.
Maybe. And, you know, when you think about the location of where it is, you know, it's right in the smack dab in the middle of America. Mm-hmm. You've got the mountain range protecting you. So maybe this really is the best place for some secret type, maybe documents, technology, products, equipment. Who knows?
It kind of reminds me of the Denver airport. And like,
exactly.
Maybe this is where people are going to go, the prominent people. You can see it. I wanted to see if I could see it on Google Maps. Mm-hmm. And you can. You can see the entrance to the chamber if you go on Google Maps. And so, like, that's a little weird and obvious. But I did also see a staircase going up to it. So I don't know if the National Park Service has to go up there every once in a while. But I wonder how they keep tourists out of there. And yeah. It's also kind of wild that they were going to have tourists going there because it's so easy to just go walking on top of the president's heads. And I would assume that they don't want people up there and falling off. So
yeah.
If you want to go on Google Maps, you can see it.
Exactly. And it is kind of nice to think that there's this already kind of built out thing. So if people had to go somewhere, you know, it's already halfway there, you know, the hard part's over.
Yeah.
And then additionally, there's another, you know, speculation that actually was derived from a movie, and that inside the secret chamber is actually some hidden gold.
Right, because the area has gold or had gold.
Yeah. So this could be true in a sense, because the area, as we talked about earlier, did have some gold there. So could it be where they're just storing, almost like I imagined in Harry Potter.
Gringotts?
Yep, a little underground moment of where the most precious stuff is. Maybe, who knows? Maybe.
Again, I just feel like if they're gonna, they could have used any mountain, you know? And I'm just picturing for that might be one of the more targeted mountains. If there was a terrorist attack or something, they might want to choose a monument sort of mountain instead of just a random one in Idaho or something. But there is a chamber there, so or there is the beginning portion of a chamber. But the whole image that you get when you think of a 38-foot wingspan bronze eagle just feels very grand and kind of egotistical. I can't tell how much, I mean, the sculptor clearly loved America, and he actually named his son Lincoln. So, and that was before the name Lincoln as a first name was popular like it is now. So I feel like this guy just, had a passion for the US, whether that was good or bad. And yeah, I don't know if he had an ego. I wonder if it was his idea to put his biography in the chamber, and if he wanted the US to live on in history, or if he wanted himself to live on in history, or both. But yeah, I mean, I didn't know about this.
Oh yeah, same. No, I definitely feel the same exact way. I don't know that somehow, some way, this guy bleeds from a passion project into like a personal project. And again, it's this futuristic idea of, in thousands of years, like what will happen and how he wants to get people, which I do think is a really good argument, but it does feel a little bit like he also wants people to know his name. He wants to be remembered, which I guess I don't fault him for that, taking on this huge project, and I'd want some credit. And man, I mean, people still go visit to it today, so.
I do think it was smart, or I think it's fairly smart to have everything carved into stone, because anything could happen to those paper pieces of the originals that we have in museums. So I guess it is smart to ensure those in a time capsule of that nature. So it does make sense, but yeah. Is there anything else in there?
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like Nicolas Cage needs to go in there and tell us what is in that secret chamber, not so secret chamber.
Really, really does.
Yeah,
He's the man for the job.
he really is. So these are like the main speculations that people talk about, but I really think this is for for Nicolas Cage to figure it out. And maybe we'll do a follow-up episode reviewing that movie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say we'll do a follow-up interview with him.
Oh, that would be a dream.
Yes. So now we have some fun facts about the general project. Goodson was the sculptor from the beginning, but the guy that had the original idea, he kind of was never given any credit for the original idea. And he ended up not even seeing the project through. They kind of kicked him off the committee and he just kind of went away. But his original vision was an ode to the Old West, and he wanted carvings of historic figures such as Lewis and Clark and the Lakota leader Red Cloud. And he reached out to Gutzon himself, and Gutzon was kind of like, now we're going to do the leaders of America, not just the leaders of the West. So that was the original idea. And he was kind of, because it was also to boost tourism, because obviously not a lot of people are going to South Dakota. So he thought that more people would come to see George Washington and Thomas Jefferson than they would for Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, exactly. So, of course, we know we have these four famous presidents on Mount Rushmore, but what they represent, I guess we never really, well, I guess I've never personally looked into it, which and like why they were chosen and whatnot. So, George Washington, of course, because he was the country's first president, and he would really represent the birth of the United States. And the next guy is Thomas Jefferson, who nearly doubled the country's size with his purchase of the Louisiana Territory. So that really represented this westward expansion, kind of diving into like Robinson's idea of the Old West, if you will. Mm-hmm. The third guy is Theodore Roosevelt, who had overseen the construction of the Panama Canal, which was a symbol of economic growth. So that's kind of what he represents. And lastly, Abraham Lincoln was selected for having fought to preserve the nation in the Civil War. So listening to that, I mean, I could have guessed, well, I wouldn't have been able to guess Theodore Roosevelt, why he was picked, but I think the other three, I could see why. Mm-hmm. They made the list and why they're important to this country.
Mount Rushmore was most famously the setting of the final chase scene in the Alfred Hitchcock movie North by Northwest. The filming itself sparked controversy because in 1958, the National Park Service granted Hitchcock permission to film at the memorial on the condition that it wouldn't serve as a backdrop for any violent scenes, which is interesting. And Hitchcock had to promise that Cary Grant and the other actors wouldn't run across the tops of the president's head. And he partially kept his promise. He filmed scenes in the memorial's parking lot and cafeteria. And then he went on to shoot the film's violent final chase scene on a scaled replica, but it was so realistic that the viewers believed it was actually filmed at Mount Rushmore, and the National Park Service and the U.S. Department of the Interior cried foul. They ultimately asked them to remove the credit line at the end of the movie, thanking them for their cooperation.
Which is just actually really hilarious to think about. Well, technically they did thank them by using the parking lot and the cafeteria, but of course, to the average Joe, it looked like they were using the entire Mount Rushmore.
But it's just funny that they still went through with it, even though they said, look, maybe they just didn't have the replica anymore and they just didn't believe them that they didn't use the scaled model. But you did a good job if you fooled everybody.
Yeah, I mean, for the 1950s, dang, this must have been pretty good. Another interesting fun fact is that Borglum actually had initial plan of having an inscribed Louisiana Purchase sculpture with the whole like Rushmore, the crew, but it was actually met with a lot of obstacles. So first, at the scale he intended it to be at, it would have been impossible to sculpt the descriptions large enough for everyone to read. Imagine. Mm-hmm. And second, Borglum had measured incorrectly when planning out the presidential's heads, which is why Jefferson peeks out from behind Washington's shoulder. And so Lincoln had to be pushed over to where the Louisiana Purchase was supposed to go, which is insane. And also for the faces, it was going to be depicted from their head to their waist, but the money ran out. And so the faces of what we have is all we got, which is also interesting to think about what Mount Rushmore would look like with a little bit of a body, a little bit of waist.
Yeah, you can find the model of what that was supposed to look like online in photos, and it's pretty cool. But it's a lot more work, obviously, if you think it went all the way down to, like we said, the waist. So that triples the size of everybody, at least.
Exactly.
And it was kind of cool to see the outfits that they put on them. But I think that's in the museum as well. If you go there, you can see that model.
Mm-hmm. It's just really scary to think about actually working on it. That terrifies me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Just, oh my gosh, because what are they standing on? Like, are they on ladders? They must have been on ladders or cranes, or I don't even know.
They were I saw photos of them, what's the word? Rappelling almost off of the sides.
That's so scary. I cannot imagine.
Yeah, and actually, Gutzon's son, because he died before it was completed, Gutzon's son ended up finishing the project. And for decades, Borglum's family asked the government to complete the Hall of Records as a tribute to their father, but they didn't do that. And it wasn't until 1998 that the government finally installed those porcelain tablets. So Yeah, that's where, you know, it's too difficult for tourists to access, but whatever the catastrophes the future holds, the history of America is safely inside Mount Rushmore.
It's specifically behind Honest Abe, which I kind of love.
I, looking at Google Maps, I would say that it's more behind Theodore Roosevelt, but
Really?
yeah. It's like, why are they saying that's behind Abe? It kind of looks like it's more behind Theodore, but sure, behind Honest Abe.
It's for the drama, like
It
the
is.
idea of Honest Abe holding the records. Like I like that vision.
Yeah, no, that's a better story.
Exactly. So we hope you guys learned a little bit about Mount Rushmore and also specifically this secret chamber. Let us know if you have visited Mount Rushmore. Did you notice the secret chamber? Did they teach you about it? Did your school teach you about this? We'd love to know. Best way to chat with us is through Instagram. Go follow us at Bare Roots Pod, BARE Roots Pod. And we'll see you next week for another great episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.